Hello, I'm Alana Gordon. I'm a reporter at The World covering global health. Here at The World, we've been holding a regular series of coronavirus conversations, presented jointly with The Forum at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. We've been taking your questions to the experts. The whole discussion series is featured on our Facebook page, but we wanted to share what we think are really valuable conversations with you right here in The World's podcast feed. This week, I spoke with Marcia Castro about the Brazilian coronavirus crisis and more. Castro is the Andalou Professor of Demography and Chair of the Department of Global Health and Population at Harvard School of Public Health. Marcia, Brazil is now in the midst of a coronavirus surge that has pushed the national death toll past 300,000. Last week, Brazil recorded more than 3,000 deaths in a single day. It's more than any other country in the world. It's the highest mortality the country has seen since the pandemic began. And hospitals are said to be on the brink of collapse, with 80 or 90% of COVID ICU beds already full in almost every state. This is just hard to believe, but also the United States has experienced surges as well. So I wanted to just start by asking, what exactly is going on in Brazil?
Right. So what we're seeing in Brazil now is a much worse second wave. So we had a major surge last year. And this second major surge is it's growing at a much faster rate than the first one. We have at least two states in Brazil that recorded in 2021 more COVID deaths than all 2020. That's Amazonas and Rondônia. And Amazonas is the state whose capital is Manaus, that was all over the news, where we didn't even just run out of hospital beds, it ran out of oxygen. And that's the situation that many states in Brazil are facing now. It's the threat to run out of oxygen, but also the necessary drugs to perform intubation. So a few states have already issued guidelines of who should be prioritized to go to an ICU bed. So it's that situation you never want to face, where you basically decide who gets to live, who gets to die. So some states in Brazil are facing this. We had a variant of concern that emerged in Manaus, and it's of concern because there is plenty of evidence that is more transmissible. It's 1.4 to 2.2 times more transmissible than other variants. And it's now the most prevalent variant in many states in Brazil. We also have a situation that we have never seen before, which is a younger pattern of hospitalization. So we have an increase in hospitalizations of people between 30 and 59, which we've never seen before. Not on deaths, at least not yet, but on hospitalizations. And they tend to stay longer in an ICU bed. So basically what we're seeing now is, you know, given the lack of action, and we can talk more about this, but we are seeing a situation where Brazil should be vaccinating the largest amount of people in the shortest period of time. And yet the rollout of vaccination is really slow because we have the infrastructure, you have the network, but we don't have the vaccines. And this, you know, creates a situation where transmission remains very intense. The death toll keeps increasing, and the likelihood that new variants can emerge in this scenario of high transmission is also very high. So overall, it's the worst situation possible. And unfortunately, we're not seeing a lot in terms of trying to contain this. The last thing I should mention is that all of this is happening. Some states are going into lockdown because right now, unfortunately, we do have to do this to stop the transmission, but we don't have an emergency benefit for the population. The government ended that in December. So some people really starting to experience hunger, which is something Brazil have not seen in a while, and it's back.
It's kind of a hard question it's an unfair question, but given the state of things right now, like, how did this happen? Because how prepared was Brazil heading into something like this?
Well, that's a great question. So if we look back in October 2019, so this is before We're even talking about a pandemic. There was a Global Health Security Index, which is basically a proxy for how prepared a country is for an epidemic or a pandemic. And this was done for 195 countries in the world. So if we look at the results of this index, the most prepared country was the US. And Brazil was ranked 22nd. There are different domains of this indicator. One of them is rapid response and mitigation of an epidemic. Brazil ranked at number 9 on this one. Now, this was October 19. On January 2021, there is another index that was released. It was called the COVID Performance Index. It was done for 98 countries. Brazil ranked at 98, was the worst country among all. By the way, the US ranked at 94. So the question is, what went wrong, right? If they were so well prepared. And in the case of the US, in the case of Brazil, sorry, one of the big things was the healthcare system, right? Well, yes, Brazil has very high levels of inequality. We need to consider that. But despite that, this is really a story about failed government leadership. And it's failed leadership because it neglected science. It minimized the importance of the virus. It did not use the key advantage Brazil had, a universal healthcare system and a large and organized network of primary care in Brazil. It's also a failed leadership because the government itself disseminated wrong information. It was the first one to propagate fake news. It promoted the use of drugs with unproven effectiveness. And the message coming from the leaders kind of had an effect on the population, had an effect on compliance and trust in science from the population. So when we tell the story about this pandemic, there's going to be a very important chapter about how bad leadership destroyed the opportunities, the advantages that country that had a strong and resilient health system had to respond to a pandemic. And I should say, there's this large literature on resilience of health systems. It's fantastic, but just takes a bad leader for everything to go downhill. So we need to go back to this literature and put a big, big box there on governance because it matters. And Brazil is the clear example of that. So we could have been an example on how to respond to a pandemic. And now we are an example on how you can become a threat to global health security.
I know that, President Jair Bolsonaro has been criticized, and in looking at the federal response in Brazil, has this surge changed anything? There was a big shakeup in leadership today. We're talking on Tuesday. But what is it about? What are the so many questions about the politics of this and the politics of the health and science in leadership that have created this space? And is anything changing?
It's a great question. So there has been a change in the Ministry of Health. It's the fourth minister since the pandemic started. We had, in fact, last year when we had our major surge, we had a period of almost 4 months without a minister. We had an interim minister. And right now we spent about 5 days or so without a minister because one left, the other one never came. So this new minister is a physician. It's really clear what is really going to change. Honestly, in the first statement he made, it was very clear that he's not in favor of lockdowns, although some cities and states are doing this against the will of the president, and I should say, facing major pressure. I mean, some mayors face death threats because they're doing lockdowns. So it's not easy for a local politician to take those decisions. I have to say that the president has spoken to the nation in primetime TV and came with a very different tone, basically, sending messages to the families that lost people due to the pandemic. But I think I should say that, words matter, but words are not enough. We need action. And vaccination is extremely slow. The government is trying to buy vaccines now. You can buy them, but nobody's going to deliver them now. There's a long line. People started buying last year in the middle of the year, and the government was offered vaccines, and they didn't buy them. So, we can't have immediate delivery of vaccines now, although we desperately need them. Just yesterday, there were several changes in high-level positions in the government. It's crazy what's going on, and I honestly don't know what is the real political thermometer in Brazil at this point. Today, military in high positions of the army, the navy, and the air force are considering resignation after the removal of the Minister of Defense. So it's quite a turmoil in all fronts: political, public health, and humanitarian. So there is another thing that happened in the middle of all of this is the former president Lula, all the accusations against him were suddenly dropped, and he spoke to the nation, and then suddenly Bolsonaro starts using masks and tone down his whatever he's saying. So again, there's so many pieces to this puzzle. And what I don't know is how much is really going to change with this new minister. At least there's nothing indicating that going into lockdowns and trying to involve primary care, which we missed in the beginning, helping states and municipalities with resources, bringing back the emergency funds. So things we need right now because people are dying, people are suffering. Again, I'm waiting for the actions. I'm not too tempted by the words.
When you're talking about vaccinations, I'm really struck. There's something like 2% of the population's been fully vaccinated. And yet, I hear a lot about, and our show is featured a lot about the research that's happening in Brazil, like the Instituto de Butantan. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. And so
That's right.
where's that disconnect? Because Brazil also has a deep history of leading on medicines and producing its own as well. And so what are the obstacles here, and what are the dynamics? Because there is a rich scientific environment well situated for a situation like this.
Absolutely. So Brazil has a phenomenal cadre of research scientists and research institutions that, despite the fact that the government is not really supporting research a lot, so the funds for federal universities, public universities, and for research has gone down dramatically. But despite all of that, the science coming from Brazil has been important and continues to be important. And in fact, after the very first case in Brazil, a team of researchers, and I'm happy to say led by women, did the entire genome sequencing of the virus in less than 48 hours. So we need to say, I say this every time I have a chance to speak. So I have to say that. So I mean, they're doing a lot. They're really doing a lot. But if you think about the amount of resources that has to go into vaccine development, I mean, those groups are really struggling. We have different groups in Brazil testing vaccines, trying to develop vaccines, and there are several of those. But they could have been doing much more if they had the support. And the support has to be sustained. It's not just, oh, I'm going to give you money now, we have this pandemic. No, it has to happen every single year. So the moment the pandemic comes, the research is being developed. Things don't happen like that. So that's one thing. One thing is the challenge about funding. The other is the trust in science, Elana. This government doesn't trust science. I mean, they were promoting the use of hydroxychloroquine. And despite all the evidence, we have a protocol issued by the Ministry of Health on how to use hydroxychloroquine to treat COVID.
And this
That's
is something
absurd.
that has been found in multiple studies to not be effective.
Not be effective at all. And now we have people on the line to get a liver transplant because of the effects of taking a cocktail of drugs that were not effective. So the challenges are not so much on the potential of the people, on the capacity we have in the country. The challenges are related to the financial resources and to the support and trust from the government sustained that those people can really advance the knowledge and help the country in a moment like this. And that's a shame because our national immunization program is one of the best, has been considered one of the best in the world. And just to give you two examples, Brazil have campaigns to vaccinate children against polio, and those usually happen on a weekend. And we have a mascot. It's the Joe Droplet. He has it, the head is a drop, and it's the drop of the polio vaccine. So Brazil can vaccinate 10 million children in one day with those campaigns. And when we had the threat for H1N1, Brazil vaccinated 80 million Brazilians in 3 months. So Brazil knows how to do it, has the network of health services across the country to do it, has the people trained to apply the vaccines. We don't need to recruit the army like the US is doing. We have the people to do it, we just don't have the vaccines. So it's really frustrating.
How does this compare to other neighboring countries and communities or other parts of the world, the situation?
You mean the immunization or overall?
Overall, but also with the immunizations.
So if we look in, so there were a lot of similarities between Brazil and the US when the US was under the Trump administration. And the similarities were on the negative side. It were the denial, not trusting science, promoting not effective treatments, and favoring the economy over health, as if you can separate those two things. So Bolsonaro was pretty much repeating everything Trump was doing, and now he's sort of isolated because we know why. So there were a lot of similarities in there. If we look in Latin America, another that was very similar is Mexico. So the president does pretty much the same kinds of things, denial and so on. And the health system in Mexico was extremely underfunded. So the moment the pandemic comes, the hospitals don't have enough resources, period. So pandemic came, just made everything worse. The response in other countries in Latin America was much better, like Uruguay and even Chile. They did much better job. And Peru, for example, went into lockdown very early, trying to contain, but it's a very high percentage of the population don't have a freezer, a fridge, and so people had to go out to markets to buy food, and this basically facilitated the spread of the virus. So and Ecuador was equally a disaster in terms of the death toll and in the beginning. So another similarity is the levels of inequality across Latin America, which are extremely high. And again, some countries had better opportunities to handle the inequality by using their primary care. Others didn't have that. Across the board, in all the countries, when we look at the burden of the pandemic, people who died, it's just expresses all the local inequalities in the country. It's the most vulnerable. It's whatever race and ethnicity that is the most vulnerable have the higher deaths across the board.
We have some questions coming in that build on a lot of what you've mentioned, so I want to get to those and also remind viewers and that you can post your questions on Facebook as well as other social media aspects or email. This question's from Jonas. You've spoken about leaders, public leaders' attitudes about the virus. Can you tell us more about attitudes among the general public? Like, are people taking things like masking and social distancing seriously? Or how are you observing these responses when national leaders like the President Bolsonaro, downplay the threat?
It's a great question. So what we see is that on the one hand, we have all this infodemics coming from the leaders, but also across WhatsApp is probably the most important one in disseminating the fake news. But we also have a polarized society. And since we don't have a mass communication campaign from the federal level that really explains what it is, explains the danger, explains how people should protect themselves. So we don't have that. Although historically Brazil always have those campaigns on TV, on all kinds of media. So what we end up with is a situation that you combine the misinformation, the lack of communication, and the polarization, simple public health measures become a political statement. And the use of masks is one. So, you know, if you support the president, you're not going to use masks. This is kind of changing now from the federal level. The president is now wearing masks more. It's very interesting. But we still have a fraction of the population that don't wear masks. Since the end of the year, we have all this, you know, illegal parties going on, and the police has to go there and stop. So we do have a fraction of the population that think that we're done, or this is not a big deal. I'm young. I'm not going to have any problems. If I catch it, I'm not going to go to the hospital. But again, I wonder, it's sort of the alternative scenario, which we never know how it would be, because that's not the life we're living. But you would wonder what would have happened if we had a solid campaign, as usual we have, the same message to everybody and the right message to everybody. So when you get your phone and comes this video in WhatsApp that really looks legit, you say, wait a second, that's not the right information. People don't have this chance to even doubt what they're getting in social media, because nobody else is telling them what is the right message. So, you know, we do have a fraction of the population that do not comply with the actions. And I think that's why it's all the lack of communication, the polarization, and the misinformation circulating.
I imagine also it's natural to turn to other remedies if there's oxygen shortages and other things or confusion, whether it's traditional or non-scientific based like hydroxychloroquine, when there are these promotions of things that might seem more accessible. And I wonder if that's surprised public health researchers or kind of caught off guard, or if there's more to learn about that.
I'm glad you asked that, because what we saw in Brazil is that unfortunately we had some physicians supporting it. So, and that it really has been the subject of a lot of debate. At the moment you have physicians supporting something that has no scientific evidence that it works. So again, it becomes very hard for, you know, a regular citizen that is does not have access to all those research papers, whatever. The doctor is telling them to take the drugs, so they take the drugs. We have some private insurance that they were distributing the COVID kits, and the COVID kits was a bunch of drugs. There was no mask in the COVID kit, right? It's all about drugs. They would send those kits to the people that have that insurance, and people are taking this. And on top of that, Ilana, it creates this false sense of protection. So we have one study in Manaus that actually noticed that people that took those drugs, they have a higher risk of being infected. And because they walk around without a mask, they feel unprotected because I'm taking the drug. So it's much worse than we think. It's not just that they are taking something that is not effective. They feel that they are protected because they are taking this. And part of the fault comes from those physicians that, you know, they should do better in honoring the profession they have, but they're supporting the use of those drugs.
There's three related questions here coming in, and I almost want to read them all out because they're sort of related, but I'll hold back a little bit. But it's about variants and surveillance. So this question's from Michael. The reinfection in Manaus after 76% of the population was previously infected seems to invalidate the natural herd immunity strategy. What do you make of this? Do you agree?
Well, I honestly don't see herd immunity as a strategy at all. I mean, I really don't think we should be talking about this. I mean, herd immunity, the concept of herd immunity without a vaccine makes no sense. That's not a public health strategy. And there is some research done by lawyers in Brazil that basically analyzed all decrees, statements, everything the president has said. And their conclusion is that the president intentionally had a plan of letting the virus go, get people infected, and everything would be fine. And there are a lot of legal procedures that are being filed because they basically want to make a case that there was a sort of a criminal agenda behind the whatever the government did. So I don't think herd immunity is a strategy. What happened in Manaus is a clear example of how high the attack rate can be if you let a pandemic go completely unmitigated, and how that does not work because you could have a new variant that not only is more transmissible, but it also leads to reinfection. And we have documented cases of people that were infected last year and got a new infection with P1. So that is not a strategy. It never was, and it never will be. I should say one more thing. If we had a good genomic surveillance, and honestly, not a single country really has a good one. I think the UK is the country that tested the most, did more
New
sequences.
Zealand too.
Yeah. So if we have a good network that really connects the world, so anything that happens in one place, everybody gets this, then we would have a better chance to actually identify new pathogens when they emerge, but also identify new variants when you have an epidemic or a pandemic going on. We don't have this. When we identify them, they are already causing a lot of damage. So, but yeah, but I think the short answer is that let's stop saying that herd immunity is a strategy. That is not a strategy. That is just a way of killing people.
Two more having to do with variants. One is from Kat, which you just referenced a little bit, but with this kind of variant spreading quickly, what surveillance is happening now inside Brazil? I mean, you referenced this team of women that quickly sequenced the coronavirus at the onset. What kind of surveillance is happening? Is there international collaboration? And then I want to partner this with a question from Haley. Viruses don't know national borders. And so, as this variant that was first identified in Brazil makes its way around the world, is there any kind of pressure that the government in Brazil is experiencing from the international community?
Yeah, so let me start by the last one. So the P1 variant is actually in 41 countries already as of March 23. So it does spread. You're absolutely true. Virus, mosquitoes, none of that, no borders. Only we care about borders. They don't. So today there is a major article in The Guardian, for example, talking about how other countries in South America are extremely worried about Brazil. There is a new coalition of several countries, including most, I think most from Europe, and going back to this global health security agenda and discussing what countries really should do to, avoid what we're seeing. If we have direct pressure from other countries in Brazil, not that I know of, but it could happen, honestly. I think two things could happen. Other countries could see how much of a danger Brazil is to the world and try to help Brazil out in getting additional doses of vaccines. And I think that would be great because it would benefit everybody, because again, the chances that a new variant will emerge become much higher if we don't contain this transmission. I don't know if that's even possible. The other strategy would be to have any kind of sanctions, but that's just going to make things worse. So I honestly think that for the world, one of the best things that could happen now is if there could be a coalition to get more doses to Brazil and make sure people get vaccinated faster. I don't know if this is feasible. In terms of the genomic surveillance, so Brazil is part of this network that monitors the flu virus every year, sends the information to the WHO, so which we know which vaccine we're going to have for the flu season. So Brazil is part of this network. Now, there is a fixed number of samples that are analyzed. It's not a network designed to detect new things circulating. It's a network decided to know what kind of flu is circulating, what kind of virus is circulating, so we can make the vaccine. So the short answer is right now, mainly based on Fiocruz, which is one of the major research institutions in Brazil, the other one that produces vaccines, it's Butantan and Fiocruz. They do have regular analysis of samples that are collected, but again, it's not a sample designed on an epidemiological basis. So you actually sample from something that is representative of what's circulating. It's not designed to pick up new variants, but they are trying to sequence many more samples that they were doing before. That's how we know that P1 is the most prevalent in several states because of this effort of doing sampling. Can we do better? Oh, definitely. I mean, at this point, what should have happened, again, with the support from the government, is trying to bring together every single lab in the country that can do sequencing. That includes the public universities, the private labs, everybody, in an effort to try to sample and sequence as much as we can to identify those variants. That hasn't happened yet. It's better than when we started, but it's not enough to pick up what's circulating.
It's an experience also in other countries as well. So I'm getting several questions about vaccines. What vaccines are available in Brazil? Do you have any information about the ones developed in Russia and China? What's been approved?
So Brazil has approved it too on an emergency basis. It's the Oxford AstraZeneca and the Sinovac CoronaVac. Those are the two vaccines being used. The CoronaVac is produced by Butantan. The Oxford AstraZeneca is produced by Fiocruz.
So these are two like collaborations. The Sinovac it was developed in China, is that?
Yes.
And then the AstraZeneca one, the Oxford AstraZeneca one. But these are with in collaboration being tested and developed in Brazil. Is that what you're saying?
The Oxford AstraZeneca had both of them had trials in Brazil. Yes, we also had phase three trial of the Janssen Johnson and Johnson vaccine was in Brazil, but we didn't buy it. But I believe the government is planning to buy now. But by now, I don't even know when we're gonna get the doses because many other countries bought before Brazil, and we don't have anything for immediate delivery. So those two vaccines are the ones being used. It's a very small percentage of the population that has been vaccinated. It's going very slow. There was a delay in receiving the main component. So Brazil will eventually produce the component and produce the entire vaccine. But in the beginning, it was receiving the component and then producing the vaccine. So there were several delays. So Fiocruz was very delayed in being able to deliver the doses of Oxford AstraZeneca. It's really picking up now. But it's still going to take some time until Brazil can speed up vaccination, only relying on those two vaccines being produced in the country. So the Sputnik vaccine, the Russian one, is the documentation is being analyzed by the main body in Brazil that approves drugs and everything. There were some documents missing, so it hasn't been fully approved yet. And the others, we don't have approval yet. I mean, there has to be a petition to approve for an emergency use. And then once it gets approved, it can go into people's arms. That has not happened yet.
This kind of follows up on the question of vaccine availability. If you do have medicines, this question's from Don at the USDA. If you have medicines being distributed as a false means of treating the pandemic, like the COVID kits you've been talking about, how does then trust build around a vaccine when it does become available, especially in both scenarios that involve the pharmaceutical companies and the doctors? And then I want to build on this. What sources of information, this is from Luis, would you point Brazilian citizens to in order to get factual information about the pandemic?
Great. So the point about vaccines is important because in the beginning, the president said he was not going to take the vaccine. If anyone wanted to take the vaccine, it's their problem. And if they suddenly started to grow a beard or if they become a crocodile, it's their problem. And it sounds like a joke, but he actually said that. And Brazilians, with their terrific sense of humor. We do have a website that track how many people in the world got a vaccine and became a crocodile. And last time I checked, it's still zero. I suspect it's not going to change from zero. But anyway, so the messages from the president was that I'm not going to take it. If you want to take it, it's your problem. So there is an issue. I believe that it's not anti-vax. We can't call anti-vax in Brazil. I don't think so. It's a different origin. But there, I don't know exactly what is the percentage, but there is a certain fraction of people that don't trust the vaccine. They think it was developed too fast, which is a mistake. I mean, there were no shortcuts. It was basically science. But I've heard all kinds of things. It developed too fast. It's going to change your genetic code. Those two were circulating a lot in WhatsApp and whatever. But again, because we don't have this unified, correct message coming from the top leadership, it does become a problem. So it opens room for all kinds of rumors to circulate. So it is the big issue.
And so, from Louise following up in that, what are some recommendations for
Oh,
support?
right. Sorry. Well, so again, we have some collaboration, some coalitions of groups that basically what they do is they try to digest the complicated science into something that everybody can understand and actually be excited about. So, there are terrific communicators in Brazil, Atila Yamarino is one of them, and people trust him. He runs lives. He works in every single social media. But there are others that try to do the same. There are groups. There are several groups that are called Observatory COVID, and there are different types. There's one at Fiocruz. So those people try to be active in all kinds of social media. They have been vocal in newspapers and other channels. Those people are good sources of information. And that is basically the best place to seek for information. I think the basic message is don't trust videos you get from WhatsApp. Usually those are fake. But going to those networks, either individual people that are scientists really translating things in common language, but also those groups that look at the data daily in trying to bring the correct information, that's the best way to go.
And again, can you just, or maybe we can list them afterwards, some
I'm happy
specific
to
places.
send
Okay.
a few lists of places where people can go. I'll be happy to do that.
Great. Maybe we'll post that. And so this question I had, there was, oh, this kind of comes out of this question about trust and building trust. It's from Miranda, but you mentioned that leadership matters and that bad leadership has destroyed advantages that Brazil had. So, what do you think are key qualities to make a difference in the future
In a leader?
in leadership and in managing a pandemic?
Well, I think that absolutely trust is one of them. And how do you get trust? One is if you're honest. I mean, you got to tell the truth. You got to recognize the challenges you have, but you have to use every single opportunity you have. So you have to involve the people that are right there on the ground. Brazil has more than 300,000 community health agents that go house by house. They know the people. Those people are trusted. The community health agents are trusted. They were never involved in the response to the pandemic. They should have been the spinal cord of this response.
By agents, do you mean like community health workers that?
It's like a community health worker. We call them community health agents, but that's exactly what it is. They live in the community they serve, and they serve about 4,000 people, about 1,000 households, and they go and they monitor people that have diabetes. They check immunization for kids. They check pregnant women to make sure they're doing the prenatal care. People with cardiovascular conditions. Really, the essence of primary care, the essence of prevention, right? So those people right there, they are trusted. They can bring care, they can bring information, they can be the eyes of the leaders on the ground, knowing what's happening, isolating people if it's needed. They were never involved. So, using all the resources in the country, recognizing that there are moments when you do have to generate that. because either you do this or people are going to go hungry and people are going to die, and then put the money in there. The faster you do this, the shorter the time you have to do it because you resolve it fast. So if you are in a situation like Brazil, we do it late, we don't do it right, so it extends for so long that then everything breaks. You are going to run out of money to be able to do anything. So recognize your failures, being honest, using all the resources, and for Pete's sake, coming every day if needed to the TV and tell people what's happening and tell people what you're doing, using the resources, making data transparent, completely transparent. Right now, we don't have transparency of the vaccination data, so we don't know if poor people are being vaccinated at the same rate of wealthy people, and it can't be that way. We should be able to monitor if things are being done with equity. So, the good qualities of a leader is to be a human being that sympathizes to the population, recognizes the inequality, uses the resources of the country, and show that they care and that they're trying to do their best. What we had in Brazil was the completely opposite of that.
I want to say that that's a good place to end, but I just want to get this other question in that goes back to this question about vaccines. You talked about a good strategy would be donating vaccines or creating a space where Brazil can purchase the vaccines, because that's part of the issue is even if you can afford it. But should the US be doing something like sending vaccines to Brazil? They've done this in Canada, in Mexico. I don't know what kind of how the politics of this, but is this something that you've looked into?
Well, so I believe the U.S. Acquired or had a commitment to acquire 300,000 doses of the Oxford AstraZeneca, and they're not going to use it. So I think the idea was to actually give those to Canada and to Mexico. I don't know if they're willing to give some of those to Brazil. The caveat that we have to remember is it's not clear what is the protection of the Oxford AstraZeneca against P1. And that's the other, thing hanging in the air is to what extent those vaccines will give protection to P1. I mean, there are some lab tests, but we still need results, good solid results from clinical trials. But that would be one possibility because I don't think the US is going to use this vaccine at all. They have plenty of the others. Now with Pfizer, Moderna, and Janssen, they have plenty. So that could be one strategy. Now, Brazil got some vaccines from the COVAX, from WHO, not that many, but got some. But again, we have all the other countries in the global south that are lagging behind. So, it's a very complicated situation. We cannot close our eyes to a lot of the countries and just give them to Brazil, because then we're just repeating the inequalities we have with everything, epidemic after epidemic after epidemic. So it's not an easy optimization process, but my point is if Brazil is about to become a global threat, then either we try to do something in an emergency basis in trying to alleviate, to mitigate what's happening in Brazil right now, or everybody could take a little share of this problem. Because again, as you said, virus have no respect for borders.
This has been a really important conversation. I want to thank you. Just in wrapping up, I wanted to give you the opportunity to kind of provide some final reflections, lessons that you have in this moment for what's been a real big crisis around the world, but in Brazil in particular right now.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that we learn some lessons from this. I am happy that the US could change, turn things around, and they turn things around with a vote. We still have almost 2 years to go to have a chance to do the same. I hope we learn the lessons of how solid collaborations, bringing people from completely different disciplines, like it happened this time. I hope this will stay. This will be a legacy, and we'll continue to work that way because honestly, you don't end a pandemic just with epidemiology and medicine and virology. You're going to need the social sciences, you're going to need psychology and all of this to deal with the pandemic and the consequences of the pandemic. So I hope those collaborations will remain. And I really hope that all this effort of many researchers are doing in trying to bring the information and trying to sensitize people, I really hope this will have an effect in trying to get people to comply to actions and see exactly what's happening so that folks in Brazil could use the most important tool they have to change the course of things, which is the vote. Mm-hmm. So we're still, several months far from that, but we need to support the mayors and the government, the governors that are trying to do the right thing and facing major threats. And we need the support of the population for that, because given the situation we have now, we just have to go against the tide and do the best we can, knowing there's no support from the federal level. If that's what it has to be, then that's what it has to be. But we got to do it, because the death toll in Brazil is unbearable. And I really think what we have is a humanitarian crisis, and many of those lives didn't need to be lost. So either we stop this, or I don't even know how history will report what's happening in Brazil right now.
That was Marcia Castro, the Angelo Professor of Demography and Chair of the Department of Global Health and Population at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. This Q&A was jointly presented by The Forum at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health and us here at The World. You can find the video of this discussion on our Facebook pages at Forum HSPH and at PRI The World, and see more from the series at theworld.org/coronavirus-conversations. Thanks for listening.
From PRX.